It's been a while, but this is Samuel's Persiflage, episode number 13 for April 2007. Episode of Samuel's Persiflage this year, and it's already April. That definitely means we haven't had enough episodes of Samuel's Persiflage this year, and that's something I'm going to have to work on. Well, it's great to be here. I'm Samuel Gordon Stewart, and for those of you who are new to the show, which is probably quite a few of you, seeing as it's been so long since the last episode, welcome. I hope you enjoy it. Coming up on the show today, we're going to solve the mystery of Frog. Now, there's plenty of people in Canberra who would have heard of, in fact, I'd say most of Canberra has heard of Frog from Songland Records. But why is he called Frog? We'll solve that one a little bit later on. We've also got Frankster from the Frankster Archives. He'll be along to talk about what he does, which is pretty much collect and display bits of historic audio from the radio and video from the television. So we'll talk to him about that. We've also got another one of those interesting commercials from years gone by. This one's still actually being played, but it's been being played on Canberra radio for as long as I can remember, so we'll have that a little bit later on. And a couple other bits and pieces, feedback from two episodes to get through, so that looks like there's a pretty full episode coming up. There is, of course, no Persiflage puzzle this month, though. The general consensus from the feedback I got was that people just don't want the Persiflage puzzle. Ran a poll on that, I think it was earlier this year. People said they didn't want it. Well, if you do want the Persiflage puzzle to continue, then send me an email. Oh dear, it's been that long since the last episode that I've forgotten how to talk. podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address. Let me know what you think. If I get enough people saying they want it, then I'll bring it back. But otherwise, I suppose it was fun while it lasted. I certainly enjoyed it, but if you don't, there's no point wasting episode time on it. So without further ado, it's time for another episode of Samuel's Persiflage. It's time to introduce the first guest for, well, the new year. It's hardly a new year anymore, but doesn't really matter. From the Frankster Archives, it's Frankster. How are you today?
G'day, Samuel. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I nearly said good afternoon, but it doesn't really matter what time it is on a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. People can listen to it at 3, 4 in the morning or any other time.
Hmm. So we'll just do a bit of background. The Frankster Archives is pretty much your blog. It's where you've, for the last few years, been putting up various bits of historic audio from Australian radio and some video from television.
That's right, yeah. It all came about one day, mainly because I, for those that don't know, I used to be involved with community radio 280J up here in Sydney. And from there, the whole process just snowballed. I got into the archiving side, mainly because the station was celebrating 20 years on air. And the course of action there was to go down to their storage area and see if any old programs existed and put together a little special. And while I was down there, I found a whole bunch of open reel tapes that used to belong to Sydney radio station TUW up here. Mm-hmm. And knowing that they were going to be junked, I took every single one of them home. It stretched to about 140 tapes all up, and took the best part of 2003 to restore and remaster everything. But now they're safely stored on CDs and everything else, and I thought, well, it's not much use if no one else can hear them. So I've decided to make a little blog and put most of those pieces up. And then I got into the video side and armed myself with a 1984 Betamax video recorder and just went from there.
The only time I've actually seen a Betamax recorder in real life is at the National Film and Sound Archives.
Yes, there's not many around these days. Spare parts are impossible to source too.
I went in to do a bit of research on certain television shows, and it wasn't a Beta recording what I was looking for, but they obviously have a fair bit on Beta because they had, in the viewing room, they had a VHS player and they had a Beta player.
Yeah, that's of course been Beta was around for a good number of years before it was squeezed out by VHS, and it just went from there. And trying to find, as I said, parts for a Betamax machine is getting pretty scarce now, as you can imagine.
Well, I suppose in a few years' time it'll be the same way for VHS players because they're sort of on the way out.
It will be, and in just a few years' time as well, I think we're already looking at Blu-ray DVD, so that the original DVD might also be on the way out.
So what sort of things have you got off Beta tapes to put on the blog and archive?
What the premise was of the Betamax format, not just that format, but other formats, is the fact that a lot of people would either record a movie or go out or leave the tape running as they went to bed, and consequently they'd get a lot of the commercials in between and station identifications and all that sort of thing. And that's what I've been taking from most of these tapes, are just a lot of the old commercials and station IDs. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a lot of material where it originally came from. And as I speak, I think I have another 300 tapes ahead of me to check. So you're going to see quite a lot of the results of that over the next few months on the blog.
Hate people like me who, whenever they recorded something off the TV, pressed stop during the ad breaks.
You wouldn't be the only one that's done that. There's quite a few people around. But, yeah, I mean, I've gone through various tapes that have had movies on them, and as soon as the little logo comes on the end of the movie before the ad break, I think, oh, great, we're going to get some ads. And then suddenly it's back to the movie, and I think, you're kidding.
it's the only benefit of the timer recording systems that no one could work out how to use is that people didn't stop them, they just went to bed.
Yeah, that's right, and they still can't work it out these days. I mean, my sister's really bad at that as an example. She ended up, what was it? She wanted to tape something on Channel 10 the other day and ended up with the cricket that was being broadcast online, and she wasn't happy, that's for sure. So it definitely can happen.
Yeah, well, I have a digital set-top box here that's just being used as a spare now, but it just developed this habit of randomly changing the channel.
I see.
So it was It was never very useful when you'd set it up for a time of recording, because it would just be the input source for the recorder, and it would change channel or display the menu or something halfway through. Actually, last episode of Frasier, I wasn't at home to watch it, and I recorded it, and I got the menu over the last 10 minutes of it.
Oh, no. The final few minutes.
Yeah, so you got kind of the top half of the screen of the show. So it was interesting. But I'm sure by now, and anyone who's spent any time on the internet and still is going to scream out this is obviously deluding themselves, but someone's bound to be screaming by now, copyright infringement.
Yeah, I'm sure most people are. Although why this has been done is the fact that I love to do all this sort of work, and I just want to be able to share that with a lot of people. It's definitely not for profit or any other reason. It's simply because I love doing it, and haven't also quite found a suitable outlet that would allow me to do this on a paid basis day by day. So I'm not only doing this just to fill in the time and all that sort of thing, but also because I love doing it. It's one of my hobbies, and if I can share that hobby with a few others, then that makes me happy. Of course, there's a little disclaimer on the blog that asks copyright holders to let me have some fun, because it seems that they would always have their fun, and I think it's probably time for the consumer to have a little bit of fun as well. Not fun as in, hey, look at that tie you're wearing, it's really bad today, but fun in the sense of actually sharing what I found on a lot of these old tapes with the general public. And it would be nice if someone were to approach me and say, hey, look, this is wonderful what you're doing, we'd like to sponsor you. And I said, well, yeah, but thinking of that, it's I'm also going to probably end up in the poo there as well, because I'd be taking money from those people and actually selling the material, which is in fact illegal. So I can't really do that. So it's more a hobby than anything else.
Just for anyone who heard me breathe a sigh of relief, if you were listening about 5 minutes ago, you probably noticed the sound changed slightly, and that's because we had a recording glitch, and the system has gone past the 5 minute mark this time, so I'm happy.
Yes, so folks, actually, Samuel is recording this in a cave at the moment.
Yes,
because his main system has decided to call it quits and says, no, you're not going to have me today. Well done, Sam, for bringing it back from the brink there.
Oh, well, when I moved over to this system, the firewall didn't want to let Skype work, and it didn't want to let the recorder interact with Skype, and it didn't want to let anything happen. So that was the bug.
Story of my life, I don't get in anywhere anyway outside of the internet, so there you go. Might have been trying to tell me something.
It was just just have to adjust the masking tape holding the CD drive in, but...
I see. Oh, wow, I'd love to see that.
Oh, yes. Should put a photo up, shouldn't I?
You should. World's first ever CD player with masking tape.
So you're doing this in your spare time.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's obviously something behind you paying the bills.
Yes, there is. I'm actually working as a data entry operator for an unnamed organisation.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's also paying the bills. Doing a lot of this sort of stuff and nothing doesn't really do that. I've had to channel my energy somewhere else, but... Yeah, right. Thankfully the bills are getting paid. So,
I discovered long ago that I lose not a huge amount, but I lose enough money on the blog as it is. So,
don't we all?
Always good to have the bills paid. Those Google ads that I've been running, I think I got over the $50 mark, but I'm nowhere near check time yet.
Okay. I was going to say there's your next phone bill, but...
Unfortunately not. You have to get to $100 before they send you a check.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes, so there's no point sort of me deciding, well, there's a more profitable advertising service because it just wouldn't help at all.
No, it wouldn't. Considering the length of time, I mean, you might even be evicted before your next check comes along, and you don't really need that.
Well, yeah, if you're paying the rent, half the rent once every 2 years or so, then yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So with the audio, getting back on topic, with the audio side of the Frankster Archives, what are you doing there?
Okay, mainly focusing on a lot of tape that hasn't been restored yet. I mean, this could come from anywhere. I tend to buy a lot of second-hand tape from eBay, of all places. And the funny thing is with that is that often these tapes aren't erased before they've been sold. And I found quite an interesting thing a few weeks ago.
People who make a living out of hard drives like that.
Yes, they do, actually.
Different field.
I'm not sure whether you'd find people singing as they walk up and down the corridor on a hard drive. I don't know, you might. But yeah, there has been instances where those little 2 or 3 inch reel tapes of quarter inch tape have come in, and they were the ones that were quite often used on the portable reel to reel recorders in the 1960s and 1970s. You'd find a lot of people testing their microphone. Actually, there was one guy who read the entire instruction manual of his little portable reel to reel front to back on one tape. The whole tape end to end was to play a tape, press play on this machine. And the other one was a guy singing Danny Boy towards the end of one reel, very loud and very out of tune. So it sounds like he's been on the grog before he picked up his tape recorder that night. But what's quite funny to actually listen to, we saved that and it's on a CD somewhere. So we might actually pull that out in the next update and feature that on the blog. And I must apologise to the poor guy that I'm about to humiliate by actually putting this up. I mean, that was probably intended and probably still is intended for private listening, but I just can't resist putting it up.
I could probably annoy my listeners with it if it's that out of tune.
Well, I'm sure they'd enjoy it.
We had the singing sheep on the Christmas edition. I'm sure that drove everyone nuts.
The singing sheep. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was great. Now that I think of it.
I'm glad you liked it.
Look, I sound like that most mornings when I get up, so I could have related to it in some way. But anyway.
Well, I have to blame 2CC's Mike Jeffries for that, actually, because he was playing it constantly one morning, and I went and found it.
Right.
I can blame him for that.
Isn't the internet wonderful? Just all these bits and pieces turning up. Yeah, and I must also mention as well that what I mentioned at the top of the show is that we found all these GW tapes, and I spent the whole of 2003 restoring those. And little by little, they're all going up on the site. And I must thank at this point the Australian Radio Network for allowing me to do that, as well as all the 70, maybe 80 reels on top of that were part of Top Spots Productions, which was TW's rooftop production studio, and a lot of commercials and things. The audio tracks, at least, were produced up there. And before the tapes could make it to the dumpster, I took them all home. So that was the basis behind that. And I'm still going with a lot of the audio stuff. I've been collecting audio pieces since 1991. And it was just brought about because I had a lot of cassettes that just had a little bit of material on each, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could just copy all this stuff onto newer cassettes and just hang on to it? And, of course, when I made the move from cassettes over the CD in 1999, that's where they stayed. And now I'm just presenting what I can on the blog.
So there are other websites that have a lot of audio and video on them. YouTube comes to mind. They are making a profit out of this. Now, they're obviously in lots of legal, well, grey areas, I suppose you could call them.
Yeah.
Do you see any future for things like YouTube if they continue to just host all of this clearly copyrighted material?
Personally, I'd love to see YouTube stay around in spite of what's going on, but for as long as rights holders keep jumping up and down about the fact that their material is being used without their consent, we'll always have some problems, I think. And the other thing as well is that there was a particular guy on there, I'll mention his username, I mean he's fairly well known around the YouTube community, Dr. R. Keats, had an actual copy of a 16mm film print of a Coke commercial from 1956, and his account got suspended not long after that. So it doesn't matter how old or how new the material is, it's still under copyright, unfortunately.
Yes.
And there'll always be either the copyright holders themselves or one person or two people just to say, look, this guy's presenting copyrighted material, thought I'd let you know, before they pounce on them and shut them down, unfortunately. And I just think with all that, it's pretty much stifling the growth of all these people that want to share their material. A lot of it isn't done for commercial gain in any way. It's mainly done for the same reason that I'm doing it, and that's because it's their hobby. They really enjoy doing that, and they'd like to share their findings to the world. But for as long as we have the people who control a lot of this stuff coming down on them and threatening them with fines and all that sort of stuff, I think it's going to stifle that growth.
And I suppose there's always going to be, and it's probably why law degrees are so popular, there's always going to be that sort of fine line between, you know, posting an old ad online and posting, say, a full episode of Lost or 24.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the difference. As I said, whether it's 50 years old or whether it's 0 years old, it's always going to be under some kind of law. And as I said, it just takes the one or two people to say, this guy's presenting copyright-related material, what are you going to do about it? And it's gone. Yeah.
I think when I spoke to Leo Laporte last year, he was saying that the International Copyright Treaty, and the exact name evades me at the moment, but if it goes the way it looks like it's going, well, Australia will end up with something similar to the US's Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and
yeah,
that's already been very very controversial over there.
So. Yeah, this is part of this big free trade agreement that Australia has with the US, and if worst comes to worst, we're going to be bound by their copyright law. Which is going to be interesting times ahead.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we've already seen plenty of abuses of the DMCA online. I think it was a week or two ago. Actually, it was on the weekend it came out on AAP. Someone was, a 15-year-old was pretending to be some company, and they told YouTube, or I think it was YouTube, I don't actually remember the story, just take this down, I'm this company, you can't have that on there, and they took it down without any contest. It's just,
yeah,
how do you prove that you are from the company that owns the copyright or whoever owns
the
copyright?
Yeah, the company involved in that was actually the ABC.
It was too, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm not sure really how that's going to end up, but yeah, of course, YouTube, suspecting that it may have been someone from the ABC without doing further checks, had actually removed all ABC-related content, which was, you know, a bit of a bummer, you could say.
Clips from The Chaser's War on Everything, now that I think of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably shouldn't comment too much on the case, because it's probably going to be before a court.
It's before the court, so we'll leave that there, yeah.
Yes.
But suffice to say that a lot of content has been removed from YouTube and probably will be removed from other places fairly soon, I would imagine, if, you know, there's a couple of people that are intent on shutting down various sites. Well, we'll have to see.
Mm. And just this morning on Slashdot, as we record this anyways, this morning Google announcing that they think they will have their copyrighted material detection system online later this year. Although,
yes,
you ask me, it's kind of like the content filtering for the internet. It's just, it's either going to pick up too much or not enough, and stuff's always going to slip through and stuff.
I mean, I must say, with all these protection systems, there's always going to be one or two that slip through the cracks.
Mm.
If we go back to the fact when Macrovision for video was first brought in, a lot of people found that by using a little conditioner box that it would bypass those Macrovision signals and allow that content to be freely recorded on any medium at all.
Mm.
So that proved to be less than effective when it first came out. But then they started, well, Macrovision Corporation anyway, started making Macrovision versions B, C and D after that, and it got more stronger and couldn't be bypassed.
Mm.
So
and then, of course, CSS on
CSS
DVDs.
That's right. And the next big thing would be whatever protection they're using for Blu-ray and HD DVD.
Yeah, which is already sort of being supposedly
been cracked
here, there and everywhere else.
So. Yeah, just like that. I mean, I can't keep up with it all, to be honest.
Mm.
But some interesting things happening anyway.
Mm. So where do you see the Frankster Archives going in the next year or two? Do you think it'll get bigger? Will you expand the base of content, or what do you think you'll do with it?
I'm definitely looking at getting more server space to present all the content. At the moment, we're on 300 megs with a 3 gig transfer per month. I could never have anticipated what kind of response the blog would have gotten, as there's quite a large number of people actually downloading all the material available and the podcast, which was a bit of a surprise to me. Because there was quite a few people that I approached in the lead-up to that, and no one was really interested in all that sort of stuff. So the response has been phenomenal, to say the least.
Yeah. I suppose that's one of the things with the internet as a medium, is that all of these sort of things, unless they're actually already conceptualized and they're already visible, people just think, yeah, whatever.
Right. Well, yeah, that's right. And the other thing as well is that everybody loves stuff for free. And, of course, if all the content has been made for free, well, yeah, of course everybody would like it, because it costs them nothing, actually. It would only cost them probably, you know, traffic charges or something like that by their ISP, but the actual content itself is free. And, of course, when people say the word free, away they go, except for the fact that these sites that advertise free this, free that, and then you've read the fine print and it's like, yeah, you've got to pay $30 US a year.
Hmm.
Well, not exactly.
It kind of makes the 55 cents to call weird late-night television supposed quiz shows quite appealing.
Yes, yes. I was going to say something about that, but I might fall foul of the law, so I'll leave that.
Yes. Well, I had a little experiment with that, just a little scientific experiment. Just set myself a budget. I think it was about $20,
to
see if I could get through.
Yeah.
And I used up that budget, and every time I got the recorded message saying, you haven't been put through, but we'll put you in the second chance draw.
Right.
Mm.
I see. Only when they've made their certain amount of money, they'll let you through.
Mm.
The other thing, I'd have to ask you this question, Sam. What would be the most obvious thing that you could find in a bedroom? The most obvious thing.
You've got their top answer, do you?
Well, it would obviously be a bed, wouldn't it?
Well, yes. Wait, okay. Was the bottom answer or not on there? Or?
It wasn't on the list, would you believe?
What was the top answer?
Aftershave.
The British version of that show got taken off the air because of those sort of answers.
Really? No, yeah. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it was something you'd find in a woman's handbag, and I don't remember what the top answer was, but it had absolutely nothing to do with anything.
And I believe it.
Tell me, what do you think is the opposite of a new moon?
The new moon?
Hmm.
An old moon, isn't it?
Well, I've always known it as a full moon, but they moon. Reckon it's an old moon.
I see.
Hmm, but nowhere on any calendar have I ever seen old moon.
An old moon. Yes. Well, if you discount Bert Newton, but there you go. Sorry, Bert.
So, do you think that particular show will last?
I would love it to be taken off here this instant. But it seems it's got these people that congregate in groups of 200 or 300 that are just hanging by the TV each night, waiting for their little 5 seconds of fame, or 0 seconds of fame if they don't make it to round two.
Yeah, I've noticed that Wynn Television, since the Cricket World Cup, seemed to have canned it, because unbeknownst to me, it was on in Sydney, and TUE actually had a little bit of fun with it, trying to get through. And listening to them babble very slowly. And it wasn't on down here in Canberra. I don't know what we had. We had a movie or something, I think. But actually, Wynn have dumped Channel 9's other peculiar program, The Catch-Up, in the middle of the day.
Oh, well, all I can really say is thank God for that. I mean, I'm not normally home to see it, but what I've heard about it, it's pretty unfavourable with quite a few people. So The Catch-Up, well, I can't think of a better name quick enough, but I wish I could. There's other names that I could use for it which are not publicly broadcastable, but we'll leave that one right there.
I could put beeps over them if you like.
Well, I was going to say the F-up, but that's okay.
Well, that's probably quite appropriate. Okay, so we've got the Frankster archives, but what's in the podcast?
The podcast is basically me just rabbiting on for about half an hour of everything. Sorry?
Like we've just done.
Yes, that's right. Basically of anything, everything, and nothing, all in one place.
Exactly what we've just done, Frankster.
There you go, all in one place. What more could everybody want? The podcast basically features a lot of material that I haven't put up on the blog, some exclusive material to the podcast, you could say.
Free and exclusive, the two buzzwords of the industry.
Yeah, that's right, and they're no longer two mutually exclusive terms, unfortunately. But there's whatever I can basically find in the archive at that time, going through a multitude of CDs and tapes and everything else, is what ends up on the podcast. So it's completely unplanned week to week, or month to month, as we've gone to now. We used to do it weekly, but it sort of took over my life, and I thought, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to put it on monthly. So it stayed monthly for a while. And as you know yourself, Samuel, it takes quite a bit of effort to put a podcast together. And doing that week to week, I thought, I just can't do it. So I've gone to monthly. But the content is mainly just bits and pieces out of the vault at random.
Well, this show used to be monthly, and it's supposed to be monthly, and we had a December edition before Christmas, and we were supposed to have a best of on New Year's Day. That was late January, and what's it now? It's April.
How about that?
Where did all that time go?
We're staring actually down the barrel of Anzac Day shortly.
Indeed we are.
At the time of rolling this.
Yes, and I tried doing a daily podcast at one stage around this time last year, actually. I started off this little daily podcast it was pretty much a daily opinion piece, and the trouble with opinion pieces is that they take so much effort.
They do.
When you hear anyone do an opinion piece, you think, it's just coming off the top of their head. But Okay, I didn't do much research on it, but you've still got to, you've still got a lot of effort to go to, and you've still got to, with podcasts, you've still got to do all of the podcast stuff.
That's right, yeah. So, I've got to mention as well, Andy Grace from Andy Grace Media at andygrace.com, he also, when he first got into podcasting, used to do it daily as well, and that used to stretch between 15 and 20 minutes, dedicate almost his whole life to a daily podcast.
Mm.
And understandably, he stopped those, not only because I think he may have been getting tired of doing a podcast, but his wife, Eloise, has just had a baby. And, of course, that's probably taking all their time now and the various shifts that Andy actually does at Triple M.
Hmm.
So that's taking up quite a bit of time, and it's probably been about a year now that he hasn't done a podcast, and I don't blame him because actually putting one together can take a lot of time.
Hmm.
And to think he used to do that daily is just amazing.
Yeah, well, and people listening, and I don't blame them for it because, I mean, they're listening, they've got no interest in sort of putting together a podcast usually, but they just sort of download this 30-minute chunk of audio and think, well, it couldn't take more than an hour, surely. But, you know, once you start preparing it, you record it, you edit it, you put it together, you upload it, you write the stuff for it, you do the feeds, it does take time. And
it's a lot of time. My latest podcast is actually at 30 megabytes this time around. It actually goes for 43 minutes, and mainly because I went overboard. Just started the thing rolling and just kept talking and talking, and it ended up such a long time. And I think I've broken the record for my podcast anyway, because they're usually around 20 minutes, 25 minutes, but it's the first time I've ever scraped 43 minutes. Couldn't believe that. So that would be the April edition.
I got carried away last year doing a podcast where I decided that I was just going to have some fun with bits of spam I'd received, and any of the ones where they actually included a phone number to ring them to arrange their ridiculous bank transfers, I was going to ring them, and the phone lines were bad, but I had so much fun doing it that I broke my golden rule of it must fit on an audio CD. It didn't, it went over 80 minutes.
Yeah, it did. Although being technical, you could actually buy yourself a 99-minute CD and put it on there, because there are some 99s available, but their reliability is a bit, you know, screwy.
And would anything play it?
And the probably newer players, I think. I don't think it'd be backwards compatible with any other. Yes. But anyway, talking shop again.
Yeah. You know what I haven't mentioned yet?
What's that?
The address of Brankster's Archives.
Yes. For those of you wanting to check out just what all this is about, you can head to frankster.zanyspace.com. That's frankster.zanyspace.com. Of course,
link in the show notes.
http://, of course.
You'd be amazed how many people add W's to addresses just because they think you need them.
Well, that's right. It also looks pretty on the address bar, so there you go. If you want to head over, frankster.zanyspace.com. Well, yeah. Depends what browser you were using and what colours you were using.
That's true. I mean, just getting all technical, and people, if they're still listening, won't mind us getting all technical.
That's okay. I mean, I have an endless supply of coffee here for everybody, so.
So do I, actually, but I'll probably drink it. But www is actually technically a subdomain of the real domain. So
it is Frankster, indeed.
Well, I suppose frankster.zanyspace.com is actually a subdomain of zanyspace.com.
It is actually, yeah.
So if they were going to do anything, it would be www.zanyspace.com, which would take them somewhere completely different. So don't do that. Go to frankster.zanyspace.com.
Straight to the Zanyspace control panel where you've always wanted to be.
You know, I think I've babbled for long enough.
I think we both have.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to keep going, then we'll just keep recording. But, but otherwise, I think we might call it a day, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Samuel. Really appreciate it. And, yeah, great to talk to you.
Likewise. And, of course, once again, frankster.zanyspace.com. There's plenty of information, plenty of material there.
There's information as well, folks.
And you're always on the lookout for old radio material and things?
Yeah, definitely. If anyone in their garages or anything like that has any old audio tape, video tape, get in touch with us. If I can also mention the email address as well, send me a sec.
Certainly.
archiveslibrary@optusnet.com.au if you want to get in touch with us.
Another link in the show notes.
That's right. This also applies to water-damaged videotapes, would you believe? We can actually salvage those too. So if you have any water-damaged stuff, whatever you do, don't throw it away. Don't take it to the tip. Get in touch with us, archiveslibrary@optusnet.com.au. And if you like, well, we also offer a service where you can have your Betamax memories transferred to DVDs. Oh. So feel free to get in touch.
Yes, well, because he has the only living Betamax player in the country.
I tell you what, if I get any more tape, I'm going to need a new head stack.
And then you're not going to be able to do it because you can't find the parts.
That's right. And then I'll have to move up to Betacam SP and all those other formats.
Oh, dear. I think this time we might leave it there.
I think so.
Been a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, and likewise, Samuel. Great to talk to you. Thanks for this.
It's interesting that since recording that interview a couple of days ago, Wynn Television have pretty much confirmed that, yes, they have cancelled the Catch-Up and Quizmania, and it's actually part of something a little bit bigger. They're currently in negotiations with Channel 9 for their affiliation deal. Channel 9 want a lot more money than Wynn are willing to pay. And Wynn took those two shows off, and admittedly they weren't really great shows anyway, but Wynn took them off the air in an effort to show Channel 9 that, well, if you're not going to come to the table, we can source our own programming elsewhere. And it's also coming to light that Wynn would like to sever ties with Channel 9 completely and set up their own completely independent near-national television network. I mean, if that were to come into effect, that would just be, phenomenal. It would completely change the television landscape in this country, so keep an eye on that one. That would be most interesting. An independent Wynn would, I think overall it would probably be a good thing. But we'll wait and see. Could happen as soon as June. That's when the affiliation deal runs out, so watch this space. Anyway, coming up on the other side of the break, we'll solve the mystery of Frog. But before that, it's time for one of those classic commercials.
Let me tell you about a service that every home needs.
Tom's Trash Pack.
He'll collect your trash regularly.
Tom's Trash Pack.
With no fuss, no mess, and a low monthly fee.
On ya, Tom.
Don't waste your time. It's easy, you'll see. And your satisfaction, well, it's guaranteed.
Or double your rubbish back.
Look under Tom's in the white pages.
You're listening to Samuel's Persiflage.
Well, that ad's certainly been doing the rounds on Canberra radio for quite a while. I do remember a few years ago when I was taking Natty for one of her walks, I actually met one of the people from Tom's Trash Packs and asked them if anybody had actually taken them up on their offer of satisfaction guaranteed or double your rubbish back, and no one had. Not surprised. Anyway, it's time to solve the mystery of the frog, and this is actually a first for Samuel's Persiflage. During the week, I went out to Tuggeranong Hyperdome and went to see Frog at Songland Records, and we did the interview on location. So it's a little bit noisy because obviously it was in a shopping centre. Note to self, don't do interviews in shopping centres if you can avoid it. But, I asked Frog how he got the name Frog.
It's not, unfortunately, an overly exciting story.
cutting a long story short, the nickname, or professional nickname's been around for probably about nearly 30-odd years, I guess. And all it was, quite simply, was just a combination of a few coincidences whereby in no particular order, the house that I was living in with my mum and dad at the time actually had some frogs living in the backyard. I'm a huge animal lover myself, and I actually have frogs myself now. So we had some frogs living in the backyard. When I was at high school doing exercises and bits and pieces, the PE teacher passed the comment that I did head springs like a frog, and people thought that was humorous for about a minute or so. And my girlfriend at the time sort of took up on that a little bit and started buying me little gifts, as people courting each other do. And that was basically the start of it as such. And then we actually took some of the frogs that I had from home into school, and we actually kept them as pets and bits and pieces there. And it just sort of just evolved from there. And with the media work and bits and pieces that I've done over the years, I understand the pitfalls of media work, etc. And I prefer to have a certain amount of anonymity when it comes to this sort of stuff. But that aside, as I say, it's been around for a long time, and it's just evolved. It's a bit like nobody really knows who Gordon Sumner is, but they all know who Sting is. And it's the same thing with me. When people refer to me as Brian, I sort of freak out a little bit. In a way, there's only a few people that actually call me that. It's something that I'm used to and very, very comfortable with.
Somewhere known as the home of the hard to find, how and why?
Okay. I've been in the industry, the music industry, for over 25 years now, and I'm in a fairly unique situation in so far as I've worked in for a couple of major wholesale companies in RCA Records and what was CBS Records, now Sony Music. I've managed some large stores from people that have been in Canberra for a while will remember the Homecraft stores, and I managed a music shop down at Logan for a while as well. And I've also been involved with radio as a promotions director at Kicks and 2CC, and I also hosted a cult following show called In the City, which is on Triple S FM on a Sunday night for many years as well. And the point of all this is that I don't know much about brain surgery, but I know a fair amount about the music industry, and because of the unique positions that I've had, it's given me perspective from a whole lot of different angles. And all through this time, I'd always thought that if I didn't pursue more of a career with record companies, that I would probably own my own store. And if you're going to open your own record bar nowadays, you have to have a point of difference that you can live up to. And one of the things that makes it interesting coming to Songland every day is joining the dots between people that come in looking for songs or memories and actually putting that into a tangible form in a CD or a DVD or whatever. And if you're going to come to work every day, I think you really want to try and make it as interesting as possible. And that was the whole idea of having the home of the hard to find, using the experience that I've got and my staff around me. The aim of the exercise is to actually track things down and actually bring those two points together, which I like to think has done okay, because Songland is now in its 13th year, which in today's climate of an independent record star is not too bad an effort.
Songland is tavern on the flat, then how can people contact you?
Well, you can get in contact by giving us a call. I think that we get so caught up with technology nowadays, sometimes it's easy just to pick up a phone, and you'll find us in the phone book, 6293-4677. But we're in the Hyperdome, we're opposite Coles, and we've also got an email address of songland@protel.net.au. And as I say, if you're sitting out there and if there's something that you're looking for that you haven't been able to find at all, you might be surprised what we can actually track down. Basically, we say to people, if it is available on the planet, we can track it down. We don't make promises we can't keep, but if you challenge us, you might be surprised. We had a guy that came in a couple of years ago, actually, and made a flippant request to actually create a Dennis Wilson CD, Pacific Ocean Blue, and said, oh, you're home of the hard to find, you'll never find this, I'll give you $500 if you can find it, and gave me the verbal challenge. And around about 2.5 weeks later when I tracked it down and gave him a call and said, will you owe me $500? He nearly fell on the floor, and I said, it's quite okay. You know, it's here, come in, like, at a very, very reasonable price. So if you're going to make a challenge to us, just be, you know, prepared that we might be able to back it up.
It was nearly the most expensive record.
It could have been if I charged him the $500 that he flippantly challenged me to do, but we don't work like that here. I'd like to think that Songland has a stance of credibility. We don't profess to know everything about all forms of music, and I think that is in actual fact one of our strengths. We don't do much, and we do very little actually in rap and dance and hip-hop and those styles of music. We specialise in metal and alternative, and of course in country as well. And the whole idea of Songland, well, for any business nowadays, should be that if you're going to make a positioning statement, if you're going to actually put an offer forward, you've really got to be able to back it up. And there's no point in some standing behind the counter and trying to talk about the genres of music that we know nothing about, because people out there know a lot about music as well, and it would be seen right through, and we don't do that sort of thing. But because we do what we do, I think, well, we thereby have a lot of credibility in the marketplace and in the media as well. Obviously, a few people out there would have heard me on at different times, whether it be on the dating game with David Kilby recently, or from the Inner City years on Triple S. And to the extent of when we had our 10th birthday concert a couple of years ago now, out at the Rose Cottage, we had some great acts that came along, being Sam McClymont, Travis Collins, who are Golden Guitar winners, and also John Schumann from Red Gum, who flew across from Adelaide just to play some songs at our 10th birthday concert. So it's a hand-in-hand sort of unique proposition nowadays when you're in this business. We work in an industry, being the music industry, of hype, and that's fine, but there's got to be an underlying bit of credibility there, and I like to think we aim towards that.
Frog, it's been a pleasure.
And yeah, thanks for your time, appreciate it.
Incidentally, if you missed the contact details of Frog at Songland Records there because of the noise, then they are in the show notes, or if you, maybe it might be a couple of years down the track when you're listening to this and you're having a bit of trouble finding the show notes, well, it's no problem. Send me an email, podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com. I'll be more than happy to pass them on to you. And Frog assures me that, if you have a record request, having trouble finding something, then he's more than happy to help. It's not a paid advertisement by any means. There's no money being made by me from this at all. Just wanted to have a chat with Frog, and more than happy to give him a free plug as part of it.
Samuel's Persiflage is the feedback. Send your emails to podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com.
Yes, the feedback, and we've got two episodes worth of feedback to get through because we had the Christmas episode, and then we didn't do a feedback segment in the best of episodes, so plenty of feedback to get through. And of course, if you've got some feedback, podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com is the email address. Or you could leave the comments in the show notes, or go to the Samuel's Persiflage website and click on Send Spoken Feedback, or you could even send your feedback by post. Samuel's Persiflage, P.O. Box 1272, Dixon, ACT 2602, Australia. And more than happy to receive all of your feedback in written or spoken form, however you like. It's good to get the spoken feedback, because being a podcast, it helps if it's not just me reading out a heap of emails. But of course, if you want to send it as a written bit of feedback, then that's fine too. But first up, let's go to some audio feedback from Peter Reddy.
G'day Samuel, this is Peter Reddy, how are you? It was so funny to hear Bill mention me on your podcast when I was listening to it today. It's a funny thing, I googled myself last week and found some guy had mentioned me in a magazine article. It's just funny how I'm hearing my name mentioned in the media so much lately. Anyway, it was a great show, I really enjoyed it. and get in touch if you want. See ya.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the episode, Peter. I certainly had fun with it. And for those of you who don't know, Peter appeared on one of, well, he's appeared on a couple episodes of Bill Grady's podcast, You Are the Guest. And, yeah, Bill does seem to mention Peter a bit. And deservedly so. It was a good interview. Well, it's been a few interviews. It's been fun listening to Peter on Bill's show. Clayton Northcutt writes, another outstanding persiflage. Samuel, Bill is always a fantastic guest and always delivers well. There you go, Peter. There you go, Bill. Another bit of positive feedback for you. And, yeah, I always enjoy chatting with Bill. He's good fun, good sense of humour, and always nice to talk to. John B1B5 writes, I just finished listening to the Best Of episode and it sounds okay to me. I must get a copy of Wayne Mack's radio book. Does anyone have a second-hand copy to sell? Well, we've put it out there. John, if anyone does have a second-hand copy of Wayne Mack's book, Don't Touch That Dial, Hits and Memories of Australian Radio, and you want to sell it for some reason, then send me an email. I'll pass your details on to John and get in contact that way. So, John, you never know. Someone might be listening who wants to sell you their second-hand copy of Don't Touch That Dial, Hits and Memories of Australian Radio. Here's some audio feedback from Chuck.
Hello, Samuel. This is Chuck Aceby here. Just wanted to say congratulations for 12 episodes of Samuel's Persiflage. I've enjoyed most of the Samuel's Persiflage episodes. My favourite one would have to be with Mrs. Gordon Stewart. I think that was maybe episode 2, 3, or 4. I can't quite remember at this stage, but although I enjoyed the more famous interviewees, I found Mrs. Gordon Stewart to be intriguing and fascinating, and I learnt a lot from hearing her story of growing up and moving to Australia and her marriage and all those kind of things. I thought that was great. Anyway, best wishes for another year or another 12 episodes of Samuel's Persiflage. I'll be listening to them and downloading them all from iTunes. Okay. See you later.
Well, yes, the first year of Samuel's Persiflage was quite a bit of fun, but the interview that you're referring to there with Mrs. Gordon Stewart was episode 4 of Samuel's Persiflage, and, in fact, we've got an email about episode 4 of Samuel's Persiflage. Greetings from London. I was just listening to your interview with John Kerr about the pirate radio days over here in the UK. I used to listen to John on pirate radio and all these years later have found him again on 2UE. It was a pleasure to hear him reminiscing about pirate radio and I hope to meet him when he's over here for the 40th anniversary of the Pirates. Regards from Harold Borton in London. Well, Harold, it's a pleasure to hear from you. And I think Harold has recently become one of John Kerr's regular emailers on 2UE. And, well, it's interesting, Harold, I'm just trying to remember the exact story there, but from memory, Harold just found John Kerr on the internet, on the 2UE website, and said, I wonder if that's the same John Kerr, and just happened to click on Listen Live and said, I know that voice, that's the John Kerr I used to listen to, and sent him an email, and from memory it was John Kerr enjoyed that as well, so quite a pleasure to hear from you, Harold. I'm glad you enjoyed the episode. And that's the feedback for this month. If you've got some feedback, or perhaps you've got some feedback about the Persiflage puzzle, actually, John B1B5 wrote another email in which he said, I hate that Persiflage puzzle. Well, John, you're not alone, but I'd like to get some more feedback on that or anything else, whatever you like. podcast@samuelgordonstewart.com or any of those other methods. More than happy to hear from you, and perhaps we'll get your feedback on the air on the next episode of Samuel's Persiflage. Well, there we go, another episode of Samuel's Persiflage done and dusted, and not a moment too soon. Probably a few too... oh dear, probably a few too late, though. That's a bad joke, isn't it? 3 months. Well, you won't have to wait that long for another episode, because there will be another one in May, and hopefully we'll be able to make this more regular than once a month most of the time, although monthly is okay, but if I can get more, a bit more than one in a month, then I will. And well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I did. I mean, I always do, so it's kind of redundant me saying it every time. But I'd love to get your feedback too, and I'd really like to know whether you want me to include the Persiflage puzzle or not. I mean, if you don't, then I do have an idea for something I can replace it with, which probably won't take up as much time in an episode, but I've had quite a bit of fun with, and you might too. But, well, we'll see how we go, and I'll let you know what the general consensus is next month. Until then, take care, and enjoy yourself. I'll see you then. Ta-da.